Welcome on back to the Rabid Rabbit Hole. I'm Chris Baker. This week, or actually, be sure to check out my last episode with Kelvin. That was a really cool episode. Kelvin is a diabetic, type 1 diabetic. He started his own brand called 50 Cal, where he gives back 50% of his profits to like Meals on Wheels type things, profit centers that give back to the community in many different ways. It's a really cool brand. It's a really cool thing that he's doing. It's a passion project for now that he's, I don't know what his financials are, but like, it's a really cool thing that he's doing to give back to the community. He has a lot of stuff that he's trying to grow into. Hopefully it goes into a, you know, something that he can do for the long term and not just a couple of years. I hope it's something that he does forever and it sticks around. But yeah, so be sure to go check that out. Today I have Haley Humphrey on. And I want to, before she plugs her socials, just be sure to like, comment, and subscribe on this video and the channel. And then go follow me at The Bake Is Here on Instagram and Twitter, and at Rabid Rabbit Hole Pod, I think, on both of them as well. But Haley, just go ahead and plug whatever you want to plug and let people know where they can find you and also who you are and what you do.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Hello. My name is Haley Humphrey. I am the news editor of Mustang News and also a staff writer for the Yukon Review. And for my socials, you can find me at Haley B. Humphrey on Twitter and Haley.
I thought it was Haley Humphrey 7. Sorry. I thought it was Haley Humphrey 7. And I was like, I don't think that's right.
So you're like, no, that's not your handle.
I think that's your email, right? Or something like that.
That's my H Humphrey 7 was my UCF.
Okay. I probably saw it in like a class email or something.
You had me messed up, Chris. I was about to say, oh my God, that's not my Twitter. But
yeah, no, but be sure to follow her wherever she says right here.
But yeah, so I don't know what Haley.Humphrey. You can give me a follow on Instagram for my personal side. And then Haley Humphrey, obviously, on Facebook. But for all story tips, questions, comments, send that over to hhumphrey@theyukonreview.com. And then also you guys can follow me on my website, haleyhumphrey.com. So yes, but thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
So Haley, you're the news editor and a staff writer for the Yukon Review, I think you said, and Mustang, maybe I'm getting the titles wrong, right?
Yukon. So the news editor for Mustang News and staff writer for Yukon Review. So two separate publications, but owned by the same publisher.
Gotcha. So what are your jobs for each of the two, and kind of how did you get into that role? Because, you know, the reason I had you on is I saw some stuff that was you were sharing about internships for journalists in Oklahoma specifically. And I just thought, you know, you graduated 2020 spring, right? So last spring.
Yes.
And that was a wild time to graduate, let alone just be in school. In the last year, it really has been pretty crazy. But you graduated and got into a job that is, you know, for the common person, they probably think newspaper is dying. And I know you hate that saying because of our Twitter and media class. But, you know, for the common person, they probably do think Twitter or newspaper is dying because of the likes of Twitter, Facebook, and just technology that you can get news from. How was it to get into a position right out of school that where you graduated, where you kind of wish you had a better graduation just because you didn't really even have one? What was all that like, and how did you get into this role?
Oh my gosh. So I will not lie to you. I was a baby about when it came out, you know, we weren't going to have the traditional ceremony and the pandemic was ruining everything. Cause this was the beginning stages, right? The spring was like, we still don't know what the heck is going on. And so I was a little baby about it because I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to get to walk on stage and take cute pictures with my friends and just all this stuff. And then
cap and gown, throwing it up.
Yeah. And so in hindsight, it was like, man, that really wasn't a big deal because I am super blessed to be where I am today. But yes, it was crazy. So even though the pandemic affected all things, and you know, graduation just being one slight one. I still made my little list, Chris. I had this little, my little book, and I was like, here's all my jobs, all the places I'd like to apply for upon graduation and just see where I go. Because at this rate, there were so many like negative thoughts around getting a job upon graduation, because in so many industries, we were seeing a lot of conflicts, obviously, that the pandemic was surfacing. But at the same time, that wasn't going to deter me. I was like, no, I want to be in the print field. I don't care what the popular misconception that print is dying. Let me just say, just a quick insert. My take on this is, let's go back eons, if you will, back to, you know, generations and generations ago, where all you had was the print medium. Print was, before news was even really a thing, we had the newspapers. They were everything. And they were the foundation of where people went to get their news from. And still today, you see on broadcast, radio, a lot of times the content that they're getting from is from newspapers, not specifically the print, not the legit newspaper, but their online platform.
The publication of a newspaper. You know, I actually agree with you. I actually don't think newspaper will ever die. I think it's kind of like records. People still love records. People still love manual transmission vehicles. I think it's just like that. Newspapers, people like tangible things. People like to, I mean, think about it. How many apps are there where you can read a book off, or a Kindle or an iPad or off your phone, where you can just read a book, and yet people still buy hardcover books or paperback books. And I think that's the same thing with newspaper. People want to go to the barber shop and when they're waiting, read a newspaper. They want to go to the coffee store or the cafe and still pick up that hard, tangible paper and read it. I think that will stick around forever. I think even if we were at a point where we didn't even use technology, we just like had telepathy, I think people would still want because, hey, shout out Elon Musk and Neuralink. They're going to do it one day. But I think people would still want that tangible piece of paper and picking up and knowing that, like, all right, someone wrote all this out and put it on the paper, you know? I think it'll always be around. It might not be the biggest medium, but it'll always be around, at least as a vintage thing, for sure.
Right. And I think too, with that, like just our experience, especially with local newspapers specifically, we cover everything in your community. So if your son, you know, becomes a state champion or whatever, we're the ones that are going to be covering that. And so every parent and every relative is coming to us to purchase that hard copy because that's a memory and that's something that they can keep forever.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you, you know, you're pretty, you seem to be, you know, we had that Twitter and media class and we had different people come in and talk, and you seem pretty adamant, or, you know, not adamant, but, you know, encapsulated by local news. Is that like your true passion? Do you have any desires to move on to a bigger, you know, national news or international news even, or is local just something you truly love and you would like to stay small and just build into the community?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. Well, on my little list, and I still have this list, I did have on there, I was kind of like, what's the right word? I don't know, but I was hoping, I was optimistic. I was like, you know what, even though we're in a pandemic, I'm going to look up some international papers and, like you said, national and even regional. But that was kind of hopeful because I think I knew in my heart, like, local news is where it's at for me at this point in my life. So I don't foresee myself leaving Mustang or UConn for a very long time. These are two wonderful communities. But yeah, I don't know. I think community newspapers are where it's at. And I don't really know how better to articulate that. It's just, I mean, who do you turn to? Like, this is actually a true example. I'll give you this. In the fall, I did a piece about a new water treatment that was coming to Mustang. Like, this was the first of its kind to come to Mustang. Mm-hmm. And it's, think of a refrigeration filter, okay, but on like a huge scale. This was going to be inserted into few wells in Mustang. And this was different from a common thing that treats water, is you have to add additional chemicals to water to treat it.
Yeah.
And so a lot of municipalities find themselves having to purchase water from Oklahoma City, UConn, Moore, Mustang, they all do that. But anyways, so years ago, there was a huge thing about the high levels of arsenic in Mustang's water. And so this treatment is going to, I know, I felt like Aaron Brockovich. I'm not even going to lie, but So this system is going to, you know, prevent that from happening, obviously. But anyways, so a lot of residents were like, at this time, several years ago, not when I was covering it, but years ago, residents were smelling like a really eggy, just gross smell in their water. And then they were tasting it, like, this tastes like crap. This is just awful. What is going on with my water in my town? Okay, so there's a question. You're not going to flip on your TV, Chris, and go to CNN or MSNBC and be like, what's happening to my water? How do I figure this out? You're going to go turn to your community newspaper because your community newspaper is covering that. And there's this is also a good point that people should definitely be looking into their city government. But another thing, that's who your community newspaper is for. In your hometown, we got you covered. But yeah,
what a tagline too.
Do what?
In your hometown, we got you covered. That's the new tagline right there. Or maybe it's not new, but I mean, you bring up a good point. Like, there's always going to be questions like, oh, there's new construction. What's going on with this new construction? You're going to turn to your local journalism, your local broadcast that's telling you, hey, here's what's going on in these parts of town. You're not going to get that from CNN or ABC, NBC, like you said. I see myself more as, and I'm always trying, like we talked about this right before we started. Part of this podcast is to, I want three things out of it. Every time someone watches it, every time I have one and interview someone or talk to someone, I want to, and I want my viewer to laugh, be inspired, and learn something. You know, do you feel like being a journalist, you're just constantly being educated because you're always, you know, there's a new story here about finance, which, by the way, I saw you retweeted someone saying like every journalist should be taking a business class.
Yes.
I agree, because what's going on right now on Wall Street and the stocks and Reddit and all that, I mean, it's just crazy. The other day, I literally from probably 8:30 in the morning to about 8:30 at night, I was watching, listening, or reading something about that.
Yes.
All day, because it was a monumental day. But backtrack a little bit. I always feel like I'm learning. There's always news somewhere. Finance, tech, sports, media, Hollywood, local government, politics, things like that. There's always something new going on. Don't you just feel like you're always learning something? And is that something you don't even think about? And you're like, wow, I just covered this story, like you said, about a well or, you know, water treatment that you might not even have ever thought of if you weren't in journalism.
Yes. I think one of the best perks of my job, even the most exhausting perks, I'm not going to lie, is that I'm a continuous learner. And I think any journalist, especially local reporters that you talk to, one of the coolest things about our jobs is we get to continually learn. And I mean, I come home to my itty bitty little apartment and I hit my pillow so hard at night, Chris, because I'm like, my brain is overwhelmed. But it's also so like fulfilling and just really, it's really cool that learning never stops.
Yeah. And you know, learning can be exhausting because you're taking in, I mean, when you're learning, you're taking in new information and new information, especially when it's like all day, every day, you're covering a new story. It can be a lot and it can be a toll. But when the growth you get out of learning, I think like that's why I think learning is so important. And, you know, I'm taking Professor Hanabit, Dr. Hanabit's media law class right now. And I'll be honest, he's probably one of my favorite professors.
Yes.
In person, people ever, because he's just straightforward. He's all about the truth and learn, and like not just learning, but like actually growing from what you learn, you know, and I appreciate that in the professor. There's so many people, you know, you probably heard it, your 4 years. Oh, Hanabit's a hard professor. Hanabit's a hard class. And you know what? That's what you should want. You're in college to learn and grow, not to just pay to not do your homework or, you know, not learn. You're there to learn. And that's a whole other thing we could talk about is the education system. It's like,
it's how awesome Mark Hanabit is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not where it's at. But it's like, I forgot where I was going with it, but oh shoot. I forgot where I was going with that anyway.
His knowledge is power lesson. That's so good.
Oh, I know where I was going with it. He always refers back to the founding fathers, Constitution, things like that, in the sense that Thomas Jefferson, his idea for education was his idea for citizens was to be educated for school was to be educated, not to get a job. The idea of like school systems was to be educated, not to go to school to get a job, you know? And I agree with him 100% because if you go to school to get a job, well, one, you're probably going to do something you don't truly enjoy. And two, you're probably not actually learning anything. You're just remembering things that you can be like, all right, form 105, you know, things like that. You're not actually learning and growing as a person from it. And that's the sad part about our education system today. But you know what a good thing is, and that's a good segue, is the internships that I saw you retweet that thing about the 2022 internships around different news publications in Oklahoma for students. How important was your internships that you had to you, one, getting a job right out of, or I don't know when you got it, but pretty much out of graduation and during a pandemic? How integral was the internships both for growth, job search, and professional experience?
Oh my goodness. This is my all-time favorite question. You've asked a bunch that are really good. But my first internship, also, let me just quickly plug this. That tweet, I think it was Lisa Stutliff, she had tweeted it and I retweeted it, is through the Oklahoma Newspaper Foundation. So aspiring student journalists who want to get firsthand in the field experience can apply through ONF. And incredible. I applied through ONF in 2017 or 18 when I was a sophomore at Rose State College. And because my news advisor at the time was like, hey, you guys should do this internship. It's really great experience, yada, yada. I did it. And what they base it on is all the applications they get in, like you put your address, right? And, they sift through it and match up your address to the closest like community newspaper in your area.
Gotcha.
And so at the time where I was living with my parents, I lived out in Timbuktu, Nuwala, and they matched me with the countywide and Sun in Tecumseh. So like 20-ish minutes outside of Nuwala. And I don't know if you've ever been to Tecumseh, Chris.
Nope.
Okay. Have you been to Shawnee?
Yes.
Okay. Tecumseh is like Shawnee's little sister.
Okay.
So I got accepted through that to go to the countywide. And I remember, my publisher, the best woman, Susie Campbell, I really hope this gets out. I hope you share this everywhere because I really want these people to
I'm putting this out probably tomorrow.
Okay, good. And I will like retweet it and everything. Susie Campbell and Gloria Trotter, another journalist who has been in her field for decades. And this experience that I received furthered my love and my passion of this is where I need to be in the print field. And Tecumseh is so, so tiny. I think our circulation, Chris, was, I don't know, maybe 1,000. I'm not sure.
Wow.
I'm really not sure. So super, super tiny. But I mean, the people that came through that office, they knew Susie and they knew Gloria and they knew them. And it was a really cool thing for me to watch. Like, wow, any kind of question, like they're coming to the office, they're at Susie, you know what, this is going on. Like, what's going on with this? Blah, 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 blah. And that to me was really cool to see how much local residents relied on their paper.
That's interesting because it's the same idea as like, you know, a lot of families growing up, or at least, you know, for me, I did, and a lot of my friends did, you have like your specific family doctor that you go to, right? It's almost like that where you're just like, hey, doctor, whatever, like, what's this deal? And you always just call that same person. It's almost what you're explaining reminds me of that, how people just like they'd go to their little local doctor or local vet, they're going to their local journalist to ask the questions.
Right, exactly. And it was just really cool. I mean, for lack of a better word, it was really cool. And I was like, wow.
Dope.
It was dope. And I was like,
rad.
Yeah.
So you said that was the experience that like really cemented your you know, knowing that this is the field you wanted to be in. How long, like what was the first thing that made you realize you wanted to get into journalism and newspaper writing, or just news and stories in general? What was like that first thing, whether you, it was like when you're five, when everyone's saying they want to be doctors and astronauts, where you're like, I want to be a journalist? Or did it, was it something that you came about and figured out later in life? Because for me, I never even realized I wanted to do broadcast journalism type things until later in life.
I went to Rose State College, which is a community college in West City, for my first 2 years, because I got on their leadership scholarship. So I was a student ambassador, so a full ride. And I also want to quickly plug the importance of community colleges for what I'm about to tell you, because for a lot of students, especially freshmen, who are unsure where they want their path to go, community colleges not only save you bukus of money, like my mom always said, they save you your time. And I think that's so important, that when you're struggling to kind of find what avenue you want, community college are so, like, it's such a tight-knit community that your professors really care about helping you find that path. So all that to say, no, I had no idea what I wanted to be as a freshman student ambassador. I was just like, you know, giving tours, encouraging prospective students to come to Rose State, not really knowing what I wanted to do. So I initially started, this is really embarrassing. And I don't tell people this a lot.
Well, so here we go. Breaking news, everyone.
Breaking news. I originally, Chris, wanted to be in the fashion industry. Okay. And so I did this like fashion marketing degree that Rose State had at the time. And I was like, oh yeah, like this is going to be so cool. I'm going to make it big and be, you know, whatever. And then they discontinued that degree program because they realized students weren't going to make any kind of money off of this. And it was just a bad thing. And so at the time I was devastated because I was like, what am I going to do? I really thought I was going to make it big in the fashion world. And my leadership advisor, Alicia McCullough, God bless this woman, was like, you know, Haley, why don't you just get a business degree? Because that's kind of like plan B for a lot of students. And I'm not trying to bash a business degree. Please don't get me wrong. I think business administration can be used for a plethora of things.
Yeah.
But I was like, okay. And then I realized the math courses I was required to take. And I said, nope. And I like ran the other direction. And I remember staying in her office for like hours. And she's looking at me, I'm looking at her, and I'm just like, I have to make a decision about what I'm going to do. I'm, you know, I need to graduate at some point in my life. And she said, okay, well, you love to read and you love to write. Oh, and you love to talk to people. Why don't you do mass communication? And I said, oh my gosh, yes. And so I took my first journalism class with Darcy Delaney, who was a huge advocate for, you know, community newspaper, but a huge advocate for me, and saw in me that I could be a journalist and that I could be a good one. And so I think she really, I mean, the way she taught, who she is, what she stands for, really inspired me to pursue journalism like head on. And so I credit her a lot for where I am today. But yeah, I think maybe her classes were, I guess you could say, a defining point of where I realized, okay, this is where I want to go. And this is what I want to be. Because at the end of the day, when people ask me today, like, why do you do what you do? Like if I go interview a source or something, they want to get to know me. And I say, you are why I'm here. Because people are initially, like all the people that led me up to be where I am today. And then here you are. It's people. It's all, at the end of the day, it's always people.
Yeah, so that's like, you know, that's a good point. And I was actually expecting you to say something along the lines of, because you just love it. And that was an interesting, you know, choice of words you had, that you don't do this because you love it. You do it because there's a story to be told, almost, right? You're doing it for the person telling the story, rather than because you like sharing the stories, is what I'm kind of getting. And I'm sure you obviously love doing it, but not your front and foremost reason that you're doing it. And that's just an interesting way to look at it. And you're right. It's interesting how people always see something in you before you see it, or just see your path before you even have an idea of where it is. I had a similar experience. You know, I was in Italy for the first little bit of my time in the Navy, and I had some, you know, things going on there where I had a mentor, you know, a leader, and his name was Chief Sergeant. Doesn't make any sense. Chief Sergeant, it's his rank and his last name, but they're both ranks and whatever.
All right.
Anyway, he gave me the best piece of advice I've ever gotten, probably. Maybe just one that has always stuck because it like helps remember like, all right, there's a rhyme to the reason. And what he said to me was, everything that's happening to you is happening for a reason. Like whether you're not supposed to be here or you're supposed to be somewhere else or there's somewhere else for you to be right now. And so when I was in the process of having to leave Italy and come back to the States and not knowing if I was going to stay in the military or not because of my health issues, I was like, well, you know what? No matter what happens, like there's something else for me out there. There's something I'm going towards, something I'll figure it out when I figure it out. And it happened one day. I just remember one day it clicked where I was like, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore, which was be in the military. I figured out that I wanted to just tell stories and talk to people and hear stories and learn things and just kind of like travel, almost in the sense of travel amongst cultures and hear different stories from every walk of life, from every industry and field. And I was like, well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to get into podcasting and radio really as a way to support the podcasting. And then amongst all this and down the line, I figured out I found photography and videography and found I really love both of those and making films and taking photos. And so I always refer back to that thing he said, you know, you're meant to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it's funny how he saw that way before I even knew what I truly wanted to do. And so it's, you know, when you said that your professor at Rose State kind of saw in you that you were going to do this and be in the journalism industry, it's funny how people can see that before you even do. So moving on to something else, what's your like favorite kind of story where you hear something's going on in that topic and you're like, that's me, I got that. What's the story that you always go after, or that theme or field or industry? What do you always go after when you see it?
Oh goodness. Well, being a news editor and a staff writer at the same time is so weird because my beats kind of just like all collide at times. So like city council, school board, all those are my beats. And whenever we get a call or a news tip about so-and-so's 102-year-old grandmother who just did something freaking phenomenal and they want to tell the news reporter about it, I live for those. But at the same time, I think what I'm finding right now in a new niche that I have been able to have an opportunity to explore, given my job, is stories that are not told, that are not provided to us through a news tip or excuse me, or, you know, whatever connection we have, like our news staff has. But I will tell you, so right now, and this kind of, let me back up. This past summer, so before I got my job in August, I worked on an in-depth about youth who are experiencing homelessness in Oklahoma City for Big If True, Curbside Chronicle, and the Oklahoma Gazette as a partnership. And I really want to thank Molly Bryant, she sees this, for bringing me on to do that, because I think I found, I don't know if a passion is the right word, but a new found niche, I guess, that I really wanted to explore, because I think this community, people who experience homelessness, are not often given a voice. And so I think that new niche of finding people who are members of my community that people are not aware of, or their story is not often told, is really important to me. So for the past couple of months, I've been doing, and this isn't, not a lot of people know this yet. Well, they will now. I don't know if I want to tell it because I do want it to be kind of, well, I don't know.
Yeah, you can save this. This is a good way to let people know what the story is coming, and then let them, they'll be able to read it later on when you publish it in the future, whenever you're finished with the story. This is a good way to like preface and kind of like get people interested. And yeah. So, you know, real quick, I'm assuming you interviewed homeless people. How, for someone else that might, you know, myself included, if I ever found an interest in that, which I do, but I don't know what angle I would ever want to take. But for someone else that's getting into journalism or is in journalism and, you know, has always wanted to do a story on homelessness, but not sure how to go about it. How did you go about that? And what was that experience like?
So what was really cool is Molly was super awesome with this, had like a bunch of sources. So in Oklahoma City, there are a lot of resources for youth who experience homelessness. And obviously a lot of people know that there are, you know, several organizations under the Homeless Alliance umbrella that serve all demographics. And so with this, for your question, she provided me organizations that I could reach out to. And so a couple that are youth specific service providers are CSU and Pivot. And so, and those are both organizations in Oklahoma City, obviously. And so I believe it was Pivot that I was in touch with their president, I think. And I had asked, is there, a youth who is experiencing or has experienced homelessness that I could speak to share their story? And she said, absolutely, there is. And I spoke with Carter Boucher. Amazing, amazing story. And so
honestly, I can't wait to read it. It's super fascinating because that is, you're so right there. That is a story that just doesn't get told, is those, the people that do end up experiencing homelessness, is their stories usually just don't get out there. You just kind of see them, know they're there. And as a society, we kind of just go on our way, and to get an inside look into that is just an interesting thing to, it's going to be interesting to read for sure.
Well, this one that I'm talking about, this particular in-depth about youth, is already published.
Okay, okay.
It was published in November. I'm not sure. I'd have to get you the issue, but okay. You can always go to my website and under in-depths, it's there.
And I'll put it, I'll have you send it to me, and I'll put it in the link in the description below, or in just in the description if you're listening and watching.
For sure. So that, thank you, for sure. That story led my thought process to, I need to be not adamant.
More proactive.
Proactive. I need to be proactive about making sure all of my community is seen and heard. And so I started looking into, is there a homeless population in Yukon? And is there one in Mustang? What's going on? You know, who can I talk to? So I've reached out to local service providers. So like in Yukon, I'm not sure if you've been around Yukon, but.
Just through it, not familiar with it.
Well, you need to come down. It's awesome. But we have three nonprofits who serve people experiencing homelessness. So Compassionate Hands, Yukon Sharing, and Mana Pantry. And this is a plug for people, you know, whatever service you need, whether it's clothing or food, these providers can definitely help you out. And so anyways, but I started talking with them and they're like, yes, there is a homeless population in Yukon and it needs to be addressed. And so then I talked to city government officials. What can we do to address this? Can we get a shelter? Is it possible to put funds aside for a shelter? Is that on the books soon? I don't know. And then I've been reaching out to people and saying, hey, like if you know someone who's experiencing homelessness, like here's my contact info. I want to talk to them. And so it's been months in the process, and this week, I spoke to my first contact for someone who is living that life and is sharing their story. And it was really moving. I don't know what else to describe it, but
I could imagine.
I mean, it's not, and here's another point that I've learned through this is homelessness is not often what people think it is. It's not always the person that you see, oh, someone's on the street corner with a sign. It's not always, that puts homelessness in a box.
Yeah.
Homelessness, and this is especially true, Chris, in the pandemic, homelessness is often people who have lost a job and they are facing eviction. They can't pay their rent. They can't pay their utilities. And so what I've seen through this is local churches stepping up. Because who else are they going to go to if they don't know that local providers often don't have in their budget to be able to give out $300-$400 to cover or much more for rent around here? I mean, my rent is what, $735?
Wow.
And often, and here's another thing, affordable housing plays a huge role in ending homelessness. And this was a factor that I learned doing the piece with Curbside and Big If True, is our rent, people's housing, what they pay to live in their apartment and in their home, whatever, is often 50% or more of their income. Just let that sink in. Wow.
That's interesting.
That's crazy. That's crazy. And then you have to factor in, okay, how much do I need to set aside for gas? What about food? What about, my utilities aren't included in my rent, so I got to pay that extra too, and all this stuff. And it's like, wow. But anyways, that's a soapbox. But yeah.
So, all right. So, you know, kind of the opposite of what's, you know, we kind of started that topic or that piece of conversation with what's your favorite kind of story to get into. On the opposite side, when you see a story and you're like, whoa, I don't even, is it sports? Is it Hollywood? Is it celebrities? Or do you see stories where you're like, I have no interest in talking about that?
Oh my gosh. This is like a running joke with me and my coworkers, is I will do anything. Send me any story idea, I will jump on it, with the caveat of I don't do sports. And
so it is sports.
Okay, but I am not going to sell myself short. I refuse to, because Chris, when I was at Rose State, I had James Nim, God bless that man too, and I took sports writing or whatever sports report, whatever it was at Rose, and we have it at UCO, I think too, and I took that and I covered hockey.
Okay? Oh, there you go. Hey, and hockey's the best.
Hockey. I love hockey. I love hockey and volleyball. Those are my sports. But I was like, this is not it for me.
Yeah. It's a totally different way of writing and information of writing. Like it's a totally different thing. And I'm saying that as someone, I hate writing. I don't want to get into writing, journalism. I can't stand writing like stories like that. It's just not what I have interest in. I'd much rather talk and discuss. But I do have to do that. And I've found that I'd much rather talk about sports if I have to write than I would about politics or really anything else. I'm the opposite. I'd rather cover sports and nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it just goes to show it's kind of a personal preference, because you want to have a interest and kind of a love for what you're writing. Because if you don't, then you're just not going to write good stuff. I'm almost sure of it. You know,
it's like
if you don't love baseball, you're probably going to not write good.
Oh,
things,
my God.
Or I'm just have sorry. A good story about baseball. You might be able to write well, like obviously grammar and whatnot, but like you're probably not going to have any passion in the story. Right. And that's kind of what it is you want to have a story that people feel the passion, or, you know, they feel the connection from the person in the story, as well as the person giving you the story, the journalist itself. Right. Kind of moving on. What's a story that you look, or what's a interview or story that you found looking back where every time you think about it, you're just like, that's the one you laugh at. That's one that's like, oh, wow, what a wild story, or wild interactions that I had with a source or a contact that you're interviewing. Mm-hmm. What do you look, what's the story, or maybe just the interaction? Maybe you don't want to tell the story itself, but what's one that you look back and it just always makes you laugh?
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I mean, there's always those stories that I know that I'm like, man, I should have done more with this. Something that makes me laugh. I don't know.
Or an interaction. Did you have a, was there an interview you had with someone where, you know, it was just all comedy things, everything was funny. Has that not happened yet to you? Where you just, have you not had a story like that? Maybe you haven't. I probably haven't in the sense where I've laughed on a lot of my podcasts. I try to every time, but I don't have one where I look back and I'm like, that was the funniest thing, like, for what I do. You know, that was the funniest interview. That was because each one is so unique and each one brings different styles and types of laughter to me personally. And you probably feel the same way because you hear so many different things now that I think about it.
I mean, I've laughed in tons. I mean, I don't know. I can't count on one hand how many times I've laughed in an interview, but I think one that is, this just like popped into my head because this man was so cute. Like a couple months ago? Mustang Public Schools recently got a grant for its first like air conditioned buses. And if you're a kid, even if you're a parent, and it's like 120 degrees outside in Oklahoma's heat and it's sweltering hot in the summer, and your kid has to get on a school bus that doesn't have air, like, that's awful. And so this was a major deal. And when I talked with the PIO with their school, and I was like, hey, I really want to come down and see these buses. I want to see the drivers who's going to be driving these buses. I want to get some art. I need to take pictures, yada, yada. And he sets it up. And I met the cutest man, okay? And he's like, this is my bus. He's like, let me take you for a ride. And I'm thinking, okay, should I do it? I'm like, yeah, why not? So we're on this bus with another bus driver accompanied us too. And the ride ends. I'm like, thank you so much. This was so cool. Like, I mean, I had rode on a bus before. And I was like, okay, I know what a bus drives like, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I'm about to get off and I'm like thanking him. And he goes, we need more cute reporters like you. You have the prettiest eyes. And I was like, so embarrassed. I was just like, oh, thank you. You know? And we just like laughed. Cause I didn't know. I nervously laughed. I was like, I don't know what to say right now.
Yeah. Actually, you know, that's a good way to segue into, you know, how do you deal with things in the field, whether they be positive or negative, when you are out doing interviews and, you know, someone says, oh, obviously lately a lot of people have lost trust in the media and don't like reporters and all that. How do you deal, you know, whether you see that experience as positive or negative, or other ones as negative or positive, how do you deal with those experiences in the field, each on their own, in their own ways? And do you, you know, have you found that it really takes a toll on you, or is it something that you're able to just brush off? Because some journalists might not be able to, and it might take a real toll, especially online. People can be very hateful online. If you post a story and maybe you don't ever read the comment section or something. How do you deal with both in-person interactions and online interactions that might be on the negative side? And I guess positive too, but I guess the question would be more for the negative things.
And I don't want to say that was a negative experience with that gentleman.
No, that just prompted the idea.
But I get where you're. Yeah. The segue made sense. Oh my goodness. I think I want to preface this really quick just with, all the years of fake news, you know, this big mantra, I guess, that has loomed over the news media for a while. And I think oftentimes people put the media, this phrase of the media drives me nuts, put us in boxes. And when people look at me, are they seeing the media, or are they seeing Haley Humphrey, news editor, Mustang News, staff writer, UConn Review? Are they seeing me at the end of the day, journalist? And so I think there's a big issue with that. And we can't sit here all day and talk about people's perspectives and how we change them. But I don't know what I was just about to say. Anyways, I think the best thing for me to explain distrust in the media is my experience that I had this summer, like when I first got hired. That was really concerning to me. Like right out of college, I'm like, what? This can't be real. So my coworkers bring it to my attention. They're like, hey, Haley, we just want to let you know there are some officials that they're not transparent and they don't want to talk to us. they don't like us. And I'm thinking, okay. And there wasn't really like a discussion about, okay, how do we like not combat this? Cause I don't want to use like fighting words, but how do we address this so that we're both on the equal page and we can do our job? And so I remember going down to this specific official's office several times until I felt like I had a rapport with him. I had a working relationship, and I got down to why this person has a distrust in media. And it was obviously their experience. They had had prior negative experiences with other journalists, and some things went wrong. And so now, every time they see another journalist, it's you're the media and I don't like you and I don't trust you. And so this opens the door. And I think I encourage other local journalists, especially young journalists, to do this, to go to this official, whatever, whoever it may be, go to their office, you know, mask up, obviously, because we're in a pandemic. But when you see someone face to face, it's totally different. Obviously, we've been doing more phone calls, interviews, you know, over the phone and Zoom and stuff, whatever. But when you sit down with someone and you really make an effort to get to know that person and understand why they believe what they believe, that's our job. So if there's someone in your community who you are going to be getting information from on a daily basis, make that a point. And so, I mean, at the end of the day, I told this person, I said, that's not who I am. I will never intentionally paint you in a bad light, or as in Hannibal's class, a false light. That's not my job. It's not my job to pick and choose what is good and what is bad news. That's the public's job to discern what they take from a news story. Mm-hmm. My job is to provide facts with context. That's it. And so I said, and what this official's position, I said, it's your job to protect and serve. That's also my job too. And I can't do that if we don't have a communication of information, because that's not fair. I can't do my job. Like, you can do yours, but I can't do mine. That doesn't make sense. Yeah. And so I think at the end, that's a long story just to say that if you make an effort, obviously with the over the phone comments, kind of different. If they're being just negative and hateful for no reason, I don't encourage people to go back and forth. I just don't think that that's smart. But if it's something that you feel like you can address and have a discussion about and open that door to be able to share your side and hear their side, I obviously think you should do that. So.
Awesome. Well, you know, I think that's a good, you know, piece of advice and tip to end this show on, this episode on. Is there anything else you want to touch real quick on? Is there anything else you want to shout out? And if there's nothing else you want to touch on, you can just go right ahead and be sure to plug everything you want people to go check out for your stuff real quick. And then I'll wrap up the show.
Okay. Well, I just want to tell, obviously, I want to plug my newspaper. So if you are not already a subscriber to the Mustang News and Yukon Review, be sure you are. And the yukonreview.com, you can go there and figure out all that stuff on how to subscribe and keep up with all my stories. I really appreciate it. But yes, that's really about it.
So. Awesome. What's your social handles again for if they want to follow your stories on Twitter?
Oh, yeah. So yes, follow my stories. I try really hard to do them through Twitter, but mostly I share them on my Facebook just because it's easier. I really need to be better about Twitter. But definitely follow me on Twitter. I think that's where I'm most proactive about my field related stuff. So Haley B. Humphrey, my Twitter handle, and then just look me up, Haley Humphrey on Facebook. So
awesome. Haley, thank you so much for joining. I actually thought it was a really, you know, I was interested in where it would go, and there's a lot of questions that, you know, I'm happy I got some answers to and heard some stories. I think it's going to be really cool to see. One, I'm going to go find that piece you did on the homelessness back in the fall. And I'm also looking forward to the one that you're doing here whenever it comes out in the future. And I'll be sure to put the fall story in the link below or in the description. Be sure to follow me at The Bakus here on Twitter and Instagram. Please like, share, comment, subscribe on this channel, wherever you're listening to the podcast or watching on YouTube. It really does help. Haley, thanks again for joining.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.